You think you know Dracula? Think again. I was just a journalist, until a letter dragged me back to my ancestral home in Romania. A ruined castle, a whisper in the mirror, a bloodline buried under centuries of lies. But Vlad the Impaler wasn't a myth. He was a memory, etched in blood, waiting to wake inside me. I didn't just uncover the legend, I became it. This isn't a horror story. It's a fucking inheritance. Unraveling the legend. Was Vlad the Impaler the original Dracula? Listen, before the truth remembers you. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today, we present to you Unraveling the Legend. Was Vlad the Impaler the original Dracula? Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The letter I shouldn't have opened. They say the past is dead. They say it lies quietly in graves, written into textbooks, romanticized into myths. They say if you move far enough away, if you change your name, your accent, your story, you can outrun it. They're full of shit. Because the past isn't dead. It waits. It listens. And when the time is right, it calls you home. It started with a letter. Not an email. Not a DM. Not a fucking PDF. A letter. Handwritten. Sealed with wax. Delivered in silence. I found it at 3:12 a.m., slid under the door of my Brooklyn apartment like a secret returning from the grave. I'd been drinking cheap whiskey, the kind that clings to your chest like regret, and researching a lead about Eastern European folklore for a filler article. It wasn't unusual. I spent most of my nights chasing shadows, connecting dots no one else gave a damn about. I made a living telling stories people didn't believe. But this time, the story came looking for me. The envelope was thick, heavy, the kind of paper that smelled old, damp wood, iron, and something else I couldn't place. Something like earth after blood. No stamp, no return address, just my name, Lucian, not my full name. Not Lucian Andre. Just that one word, like a whisper from a mouth I hadn't heard in years. Inside was a single piece of parchment, handwritten in tight, angular script. Come to Poenary Castle. You must remember what they made you forget. The truth is waking. V.A. Poenary. Not Bran Castle. Not the one tourists take selfies in. Not the one with a gift shop and a Dracula bobblehead. Poenary. The real one. The fortress Vlad the Impaler actually lived in. The place he fled to, fought for, bled in. A ruin now, half swallowed by the Carpathian Mountains. The kind of place that doesn't show up on maps without a little magic. Or madness. And VA? I knew who it was the moment I saw those initials. My grandfather used to scream them in his sleep. Used to scribble them in the corners of his journals. Used to burn letters he refused to explain. Vlad Tepes, Vlad Dracula, Vlad the Impaler, Vlad and me. I should have thrown the letter away. But something inside me, something ancient, bone deep, leaned forward. Pulled me into that name like gravity through blood. I booked the flight at 3:37 a.m. I didn't tell anyone. Not my editor. Not my ex. Not my therapist, who would have absolutely had me committed if I mentioned hearing voices whispering from old paper. I packed a single bag, my recorder, my grandfather's journal, two shirts, a weatherproof jacket, and an extra bottle of whiskey. And I flew, from the chaos of New York to the silence of Bucharest, from crowded terminals to back roads winding through forests older than most nations. By the time I reached the village near the base of the mountain, it was already nightfall. A driver was waiting. Tall. Pale. Didn't speak a word. Just opened the car door, nodded once, and drove. No GPS. No street lights. Just a cracked Tulane road veined with fog, rising higher into the Carpathians like we were being swallowed by the sky itself. We didn't pass another car. Didn't hear another sound. Even the wind felt like it was holding its breath. Eventually, the road ended. Literally. Gravel crunched to silence. Forest on both sides. A path barely wide enough for one man. The driver killed the engine, turned to me, and finally spoke. For words. The rest is yours. I stepped out, And the cold? It wasn't weather. It was presence. It gripped my chest like a warning from inside my own lungs. And still I walked. 1,480 stone steps. Slippery. Ancient. Twisting like a serpent carved into the mountain's ribs. I climbed with only a flashlight and a bottle of courage rattling in my bag. Every breath burned. Every step echoed like something was answering beneath me. And then I saw it. Poenari. The fortress. Or what remained. Black stone rising like broken teeth from the cliff's edge. A tower sagging sideways. Walls kissed by centuries of moss and war. No lights. No voices. Just wind, cold and sharp, cutting through the silence. I crossed the final step and stood at the threshold. That's when I saw him. A man stood in the courtyard, cloaked, back turned, still as a statue. Only the edges of his silhouette flickered in the moonlight. He spoke without moving. "You took longer than expected, Lucian." I froze. "How do you know my name?" I asked. He turned, and I saw my own face. Older, sharper, hungrier. His skin was pale, but unblemished. His eyes, black from a distance, caught the light and shimmered red for just a moment. And then he smiled. "You asked for truth," he said. "You just didn't realize what it would cost. Who are you?" He stepped forward. "I am what waits in your blood." I stumbled back, nearly slipped on the whetstone. "Fuck this," I muttered. "This is some kind of setup. You're not real." But he only stepped closer. Slowly, like the shadows themselves, obeyed his stride. "You think truth is fiction just because it doesn't fit in your stories," he said. "You came for Dracula, but what you'll find is much older, much deeper, and much more personal." He turned his head slightly toward the wall, and that's when I saw it. The tomb, built into the stone, covered in carvings, sealed in iron, and next to the name Vlad, scratched freshly into the stone, was another. Lucian Andre. My knees buckled. My hand gripped the wall to stay standing. And the man, my reflection, my ghost, my ancestor, my future, just watched. He didn't threaten. Didn't move. He just waited. And behind him, the castle breathed. That night, I didn't sleep. I didn't leave either. I sat beside the tomb, flashlight dying, journal in my lap. And I wrote one line. "I think I've been here before. I just didn't know what name I wore." Chapter 2. Bloodlines and Buried Voices. They say once the veil is lifted, once you see what's really beneath history's polished facade, you can't ever look away again. I didn't sleep after that first night in the ruins. Not really. My body might have gone still for a few hours, but my mind stayed wired, pulsing with 1,000 questions, and a dread I couldn't shake. The stone walls around me radiated a damp, bone-deep chill that didn't feel entirely natural. I'd camped in ruins before. I'd slept beside ancient battlegrounds and walked alone through catacombs. But this felt watched. Like the castle itself was breathing, quietly calculating how long it would take before I broke. I stood near the tomb again just before dawn, gripping my recorder in one hand, my flashlight in the other. That same name, Lucian Andre, was still carved into the stone beside Vlad's. Only now, beneath mine, a fresh etching had appeared. "Initiate." I didn't put it there. The air shifted. Suddenly, a voice echoed behind me. Dry. Sharp. Unmistakably his. "Your blood remembers what your mind forgets." I spun around. He was there, again. Vlad. Or whatever version of Vlad this was. Ghost? Hallucination? Some twisted family prank? I didn't know, but his presence bent the air like a storm coming in. He stared at me with eyes that looked black until the light hit them. Then they shimmered red like embers in a dying fire. "Why me?" I asked, voice rough. "Why now?" "You are the last one who matters," he said, as if that explained everything. The rest diluted. Westernized. Cowards. You came back. He circled me slowly, like a lion studying a weakened prey. "They changed your name, changed your story, but not your blood." He stopped in front of me, lifted his hand, traced a cold finger down my jaw. "You are Draculesti, boy. We are the knight's inheritance, and the world forgets us at its peril. I didn't know whether to laugh, cry, or punch him. My entire life, I'd mock people who believed in bloodlines and secret orders and ancient legacies. I was a journalist. I believed in facts, dates, evidence. But something about him, about this place, made it hard to hold on to logic. Like every minute I spent here loosened reality's grip on my brain. I don't want any of this, I muttered. He tilted his head. That's exactly what I said. Before I became the monster they wrote legends about. He stepped toward the open tomb, looked down into it with something like reverence. Come, he said. There's something you must see. I hesitated, but my legs moved anyway, like they weren't mine anymore. Inside the tomb, it was colder than I imagined. Not just cold, hollow, like the kind of emptiness that eats sound. The flashlight beam cut through layers of ancient dust, revealing murals carved into the stone walls. Scenes of battle, torture, but also something else. Something older. Symbols. I recognized one from my grandfather's journal. He used to draw it in the corners of every page, muttering, "The Seal of Silence. The Contract of the Night." I thought he was senile. Turns out he was terrified. "Every ruler bleeds," Vlad whispered beside me. "But not every ruler drinks." I turned to face him. "You're telling me the stories were real?" I asked. "The blood drinking, the immortality, the whole vampire myth?" He laughed softly, not amused, fond, like an old man remembering his glory days. "The truth is always filthier than the myth. And yes, I drank, but not to live forever. I drank to remember." He leaned close, "to carry every name, every betrayal, every war, in my veins. I drank them all. And now so will you." I backed away, fast, slipped, fell into the wall, coughing up dust and curses. "No," I said. "Hell no. This is some cult bullshit. I'm not your fucking heir. I came for a story. That's it." He didn't flinch. "Oh, you'll write a story, all right," he said. "But not for them. For us." He pointed to the ceiling. I hadn't noticed it before. There, scrawled in ancient ink that pulsed like it had a heartbeat, were the words. "One must become what the world fears to change what it obeys." Later that morning, I found a journal, leather-bound, buried beneath a loose stone in the wall near my makeshift bedroll. The first page was blank. The second read, "To my grandson, when the hunger begins, write, or you will go mad. Adrian Andre." I dropped the book. My grandfather, the man who warned me never to go back. The man who gouged out his own eyes 2 months before he died, whispering, too much light in their lies." It wasn't madness. It was memory. That night, I tried to leave, packed my shit, hiked back down those 1,400 steps, heart pounding with each one. I didn't care about the story anymore. I just wanted out. Away. Away from the blood and the tomb and the fucking whispers that never stopped crawling inside my skull. But when I reached the bottom, the car was gone. No driver. No tracks. No fucking road. Just endless forest. And the wind, carrying a voice that sounded like my grandfather's, warped by time and pain. "It's too late, Lucian. The door opened when you said yes." I ran. 4 hours. Branches clawing at my arms. Roots trying to trip me. But no matter how far I went, I ended up right back at the castle. Like the mountain breathed me back in, I collapsed at the foot of the tomb. This time I didn't dream, because dreams had been replaced by memories I never lived. And in them, I was standing beside Vlad, sword in one hand, a severed head in the other, and a crown of iron burning on my brow. Chapter 3, The Feast of Names. I woke up choking on soil. My mouth was full of it, damp, bitter. Rich with rot. I coughed until blood dribbled from my lips, thick and dark like syrup that had gone sour. And then I remembered I hadn't gone to sleep. I'd passed out, right there, by the tomb, curled on myself like some half-dead animal, my body shivering not from the cold, but from everything it remembered and everything I hadn't lived. Not in this life, anyway. The sun hadn't risen, or maybe it had, and the light simply couldn't reach this cursed mountaintop anymore. I stumbled to my feet, palms bleeding from gripping gravel too tight in my sleep. And there, resting on the stone ledge of the open crypt, sat a tray. Silver, or something that looked like silver, polished, ornate, waiting. On it, a bowl of thick stew that steamed despite the frigid air, a goblet of dark red wine, and a folded note sealed with a wax imprint of a dragon. The same dragon etched into the tomb walls. The same one carved on the rings Vlad wore. The note simply read, "Eat or be eaten by what sleeps beneath." VA. I should have thrown the tray across the courtyard. I should have screamed into the mountains until my lungs collapsed and the weight of this insanity cracked open. But I was starving. Not just hunger. Something deeper. A gnawing ache in my gut. In my teeth. Like my mouth was empty even when it was full. Like something inside me wanted blood, not food. Still, I ate. The stew was rich, spiced, unfamiliar. It tasted like game meat and herbs I couldn't place, and something else. Something metallic. I drank the wine, and with it came the fire. Visions. Flashes. I was standing on a battlefield, the air thick with smoke and screams. Bodies impaled on stakes taller than trees. Horses foaming at the mouth. A man beside me, wearing my face, laughing as he drove a spike through another man's spine. Mercy, the man had begged. Mercy is the comfort of those who win, my doppelganger whispered and rammed it through. The vision shifted. I was in a throne room, torchlight flickering on stone walls, wet with something that wasn't water. A woman knelt before me, trembling. She wore a dress of gold, but her wrists were bare and bloody. "I've given you my name," she wept. "And now," I said, lifting a blade that shimmered like ice, "you'll give me your silence." Then I swung. I fell backward in the real world, knocking over the tray, the wine shattering beside me. My heart pounded like it wanted out of my chest. "What the fuck is happening to me?" I shouted into the emptiness. "What are you doing to me?" From the shadows, I heard footsteps. Deliberate. Slow. Approaching. "Your mind is catching up," Vlad said, stepping into the dim circle of firelight. "The feast awakens the ancestral blood. Every bite, every drop, unlocking what was sealed." He crouched beside me, picked up a shard of the goblet, studied it. "You've begun the rite," he said. "Now you must finish it, or be torn in half by the half-truths rotting in your skull." I gritted my teeth. "What rite?" He didn't answer. Instead, he motioned for me to follow. Down a narrow corridor I hadn't noticed before. Behind the tomb, carved into the earth itself. The air smelled different there. Older. Thicker. Like mildew. Metal. And memories. The passage led to a massive wooden door reinforced with iron bands. Vlad pressed his hand against the center, and the dragon's symbol glowed faintly before the door creaked open. Beyond it was a library. No, a tomb of stories. Scrolls. Books. Manuscripts. Some wrapped in leather. Some in what I swear was skin. Human, if I had to bet. Each one labeled not by title, but by name. Isabel. Nikolai. Matei. Lavinia. Tudor. Elling. Gregor. Andre. Hundreds of names. Thousands. I walked through the rows, barely breathing. "These are their stories," Vlad said behind me. "The ones we consumed. The ones whose lives now pulse through our veins. Every name written here is one we've drunk, felt, lived." My stomach turned. "You keep records of your victims?" I snapped. "Like some sick trophy room?" He looked at me, eyes hard. "No," he said. "This is remembrance. And one day, your name will be on a spine too. Because forgetting them would make you a monster." I didn't understand. Not fully. Not then. But I would. At the far end of the library was an altar. Small. Unassuming. Made of stone and bone. On it, a single vial of blood. Fresh. Vlad gestured toward it. "You must choose," he said. "What the fuck does that mean?" He held up a finger. "One drop. On your tongue. And you remember everything. Who you were. What you've done. What was done to you? The truth, unfiltered. Raw. And if I don't? He smiled faintly. Then you'll spend the rest of your life haunted by shadows you can't name. Screaming in dreams that don't belong to you. A fractured man pretending to be whole. I stared at the vial, at the deep red shimmer inside it. I didn't ask for this, I said, my voice cracking. No one ever does, he said. But blood never lies. I didn't take the drop. Not that day. Instead, I wandered the castle ruins for hours. Journal clutched in one hand, recorder in the other, talking to myself, talking to ghosts, trying to piece together if this was still a story, or if I had become one. In the old chapel, I found paintings, covered in dust and cobwebs, hidden behind shattered glass. Faces that looked almost human, until you stared longer. Eyes too wide, smiles too sharp. One of them looked like me, but it wasn't painted. It was burned into the stone. That night, I tried to write. Opened the journal my grandfather left, pen in hand, fingers trembling, and I wrote a single sentence. The hunger is getting worse. Chapter 4, Beneath the Skin of History. They say that history is written by the victors. But here, in the bones of Poenary, I was learning something far darker. History isn't written. It's bled. It's carved into the flesh of the forgotten, pressed into the mouths of liars, and buried, alive, beneath centuries of sanitized myth. And I was walking deeper into its open wound. I hadn't eaten in 2 days. The hunger wasn't just physical anymore. It was in my thoughts, my teeth. My dreams had become soaked in blood and fog, filled with voices that weren't mine. Every time I closed my eyes, I felt like I was falling into someone else's life, waking up in wars I never fought, choking on confessions I never made, and weeping over women whose names I somehow knew. And through it all, that voice, Vlad's, echoed in the back of my skull like a cruel god's lullaby. To see clearly, you must drink. But I hadn't touched the vial. Not yet. I still believed I could claw my way back to myself. Still believed that this was just a story. That I was a journalist who could write his way out of madness. But the truth? I wasn't writing anything. I was being written. That morning, I found a chamber hidden behind the library. It looked like a study, but it felt like a mausoleum. Velvet-draped chairs eaten by time. A desk carved from blackwood, covered in parchment, quills, and bone-handled knives. Maps dotted with bloodstains. Letters in Latin, Romanian, Russian, and another language I couldn't place. The walls were lined with portraits, all of them unfinished. Faces half-painted, eyes left blank, mouths twisted into silence. But one portrait stopped me cold, because it was me, not someone who looked like me, me. Down to the scar near my left eyebrow, the chipped front tooth, the tired rage in my eyes. And written beneath it, scrawled in deep crimson, Lucian, the echo. I don't know how long I stared at it. Time worked differently in this place. Hours slipped through cracks in the stone. I check my watch and find a dead. No ticking, just a smear of condensation under the glass, like the castle had sucked the life out of time itself. Eventually, I opened one of the letters on the desk. It was addressed to Matthias Corvinus, the king who betrayed Vlad. You traded our blood for Catholic favor, it read. You handed me to the Ottomans with a smile, knowing I would suffer, knowing they would try to unmake me. But I am not made of flesh alone. I am a flame and thorn and ancient oath. You cannot imprison what does not forget. I kept reading, letter after letter. To enemies, to lovers, to his sons, some named, others not. And the last one, it was addressed to me, not metaphorically, not symbolically, to me, Lucian. If you are reading this, then the cycle has begun again. You will deny it. You will fight it. You will scream at the gods for cursing you with this inheritance. But it is not a curse. It is a mirror, one that reflects what the world fears most. Truth without mercy. What you become next is your choice. But know this, if you run, the hunger will follow. If you drink, you must finish the rite. If you stay, you must dig until the lie rots away. They buried our name under fables. They called us monster to silence the memory of what we did. But we were not monsters. We were history's spine. And now so are you. That night, I finally screamed. Not out of fear. Out of fury. I tore through the study like a man possessed. I smashed the paintings. Shredded the letters. Flung the ink across the room like I could erase every goddamn drop of this legacy with enough rage. But the castle didn't fight back. It just watched. Later, I sat on the floor, breathing like a drowning man, covered in dust and sweat and ink. The journal my grandfather left sat open beside me, and I began to write. I don't know where the line is anymore. Between them and me. Between past and present. Between horror and home. But I know this. I can feel something waking up inside me. And I'm scared that when it fully opens its eyes, I won't be the one looking out anymore. That's when I heard the chanting. Faint at first. A whisper carried on wind that shouldn't have been able to reach this deep underground. Then, louder. Rhythmical. Like a heartbeat had learned to speak. I followed it. Torch in hand. Jaw clenched. Down into the belly of the castle, past collapsed tunnels and crumbling staircases that moaned under my weight. And then I saw them, the Brotherhood, five figures, hooded, kneeling in a circle of salt and ash, faces obscured, voices murmuring in a language that felt wrong in my ears, like it didn't belong to human mouths. In the center, a basin of blood, thick, glowing faintly, reflected in their eyes. Vlad stood behind them, watching me. You brought me here to join this? I spat. He didn't flinch. No, he said softly. I brought you here to remember. You started this. You drank before. You led before. This is just the echo of your own making. I'm not like you, I growled. He smiled. You're already worse. One of the figures stood, removed their hood. She was young, early 20s. Hair black as oil. Skin pale, almost translucent. Eyes silver like moons drowning in mercury. Lucian, she said. Voice soft. Measured. We've waited for you. I stared at her. Who the hell are you? She walked toward me. Hands raised. Calm. Reverent. I am your first sin. Your final memory. Your choice. She held out a dagger. Drink or leave. But if you leave, you will die before the truth lets you forget. I looked down at the blade, then at my hands, then into the basin. I saw myself there, but not as I was, as I used to be, crowned, covered in blood, smiling, and behind me, a sea of bodies calling me father. I didn't drink, not that night, but I didn't leave either, because deep down I was starting to understand. You can't unwrite a story written in blood. You can only decide which version of you holds the pen. Chapter 5. The Whisper in the Mirror. No one tells you what it feels like to forget your own reflection. Not just to look in the mirror and see something unfamiliar, but to watch it move differently. To see your lips curve upward when you're not smiling. To see your eyes darken while your mind is still clinging to light. It started slowly. At first, it was just the mirror above the basin in the castle's southern chamber. A jagged shard, fogged and rusted around the edges. I'd leaned in to wash the sweat from my face, and for a heartbeat, my reflection lingered, just a second too long. Like it didn't want to follow me back into the real world. But now the mirror was whispering. You know what you are. The voice wasn't mine. It came from within the reflection, low, velvety, intimate. Like the voice of an old friend who had watched me rot from within and decided now was the time to crawl out of the dark and greet me. At first, I thought I was hallucinating, sleep-deprived, psychotic, whatever name modern science gives to ancient truths. But the whispers weren't dreams. They came when I was awake. They followed me into my thoughts. Every time I blinked, I heard them clearer. You already drank. You just don't remember when. I started keeping notes again, pages of them, scrawled in the margins of my grandfather's journal, on the backs of old maps, scraps of parchment, anything I could grab, fragments, questions, desperate warnings to myself, Don't look in the mirror after midnight. The portrait is aging. I am not. He called me brother today. I didn't correct him. Where did the cat go? Stop smiling when you're alone. The brotherhood was watching me differently now. I could feel it in the way their heads turned when I entered a room, in the way their chanting stopped when I passed. They bowed their heads more often, whispered my name beneath their breath. Not Lucian, Voivod, the old title, the one Vlad once carried, warrior lord, ruler of the night's frontier. They had started calling me that, and worse, I had stopped correcting them. One night, the silver-eyed girl returned. She no longer wore the hood. Her hair was braided now, lined with threads of crimson and gold. Her skin glowed faintly in the candlelight like parchment backlit by flame. You are shedding, she said softly, kneeling beside me in the crypt. The man you were is dying. I wanted to tell her to shut the fuck up, that I wasn't some reincarnated tyrant, some heir to a blood empire no one remembered. But the words stuck in my throat, because part of me believed her. What's your name? I asked. She tilted her head. I've had many, but the one you gave me was Luma. Did I hurt you? I whispered. She smiled bittersweet. You made me eternal. And then she leaned in and kissed my forehead. That night, the dreams returned. But they weren't dreams. They were memories. I was standing in the court of Wallachia, dressed in chainmail and crimson robes, blood still drying beneath my fingernails. A man knelt before me, traitor, thief, coward. I remembered his name. I remembered his sins. I remembered the scream he made when I ordered the stake driven through his gut, careful not to kill him too quickly. And then I turned to my court, and they cheered, because I had brought justice, because I was Vlad. I woke up screaming, my throat raw, my fists clenched so tight that my nails had drawn blood. I stumbled into the hallway. Everything was breathing. The walls, the stone, the air. Every surface pulsed with something ancient and alive, like the castle itself had become an extension of my body. Or maybe I had become an extension of it. Vlad was waiting for me in the great hall. No fire burned, just shadows flickering from braziers that hadn't held flame in centuries. And yet, the room was warm, too warm. Your memory is returning, he said, his voice calm. Soon, you'll understand why the world had to forget us. I walked up to him, barely blinking. Why did you call me Echo? He nodded slowly. Because you are not the beginning, and you are not the end. You are the sound returning from the darkness. You are the warning after the scream. He stepped aside, revealing a mirror behind him, one I had never seen. This mirror didn't reflect light. It absorbed it. I stepped closer, my heart pounding like a war drum. At first, I saw myself. Just myself. Sweat slicked. Pale. Tired. Then, my face began to shift. It aged. It split. I saw layer after layer peel away, like masks burning off in slow motion. And then I saw him, Vlad, his eyes staring through mine. And behind him, a child. A boy. Me. I stumbled backward. Collapsed to my knees. Gasping for breath. This isn't a legend, I whispered. This is a goddamn cycle. Vlad crouched beside me. It always was, he said. They didn't fear me because I drank blood, Lucian. They feared me because I remembered what they wanted buried. Buried where? In the hollows of history. In the cracks between churches and thrones. In textbooks rewritten by cowards who serve softer kings. He placed a hand on my shoulder. You are their reckoning. That night, I did what I swore I wouldn't do. I returned to the library, to the altar, to the vial. I held it in my hand, stared at it for what felt like hours. And then, slowly, deliberately, I drank. The taste was ancient. Copper and smoke. Ash and roses. Regret and rage. And then, the world split open. I saw everything. Every name. Every memory. Every betrayal. I saw myself executed in 100 ways across 100 lifetimes. I saw empires rise on my spine. I saw children slaughtered in my name, lovers buried in silk-lined coffins, and kings who kissed my ring before they burned villages to the ground. And beneath it all, I saw my face, smiling. I collapsed screaming, not from pain, but from recognition, because for the first time in my life, I finally remembered who I was, and it was terrifying. Chapter 6, The Red Chronicle. The first thing I saw after I woke up from the blood drinking was my own name, burning, not in fire, not on paper, but across the sky above the castle, like smoke tattooed in crimson ink across the clouds. Lucian, Draculesti. The echo returned. It didn't make sense. Nothing did. Not anymore. Because I hadn't just remembered. I'd absorbed. I hadn't just relived. I had become. Every memory in that vial now lived behind my eyes, scratching at the walls of my sanity like rats in the walls of a crumbling cathedral. And the worst part? I liked it. There is a danger in knowledge. Not the kind you find in books, but the kind that seeps in through the pores of your soul. The kind of truth that no one asks for, but once it's in, it spreads like infection. That was what the blood did. It wasn't just memory. It was possession of the mind, the flesh, the identity. I didn't just see what Vlad did. I felt why he did it. The betrayal, the mutilation, the shame of being sold by your own people, tortured by enemies, mocked by kings. And the silence that followed, how it screamed louder than the blades ever could. I understood him now, because I had become the vessel that held his story. And maybe worse, I agreed with him. I wandered through the castle ruins like a man returning to the home he didn't remember building. The walls whispered my name in languages long dead. The fireplaces burned when I walked past. Doors opened with my breath. The Brotherhood knelt when I entered a room. And Luma. Luma followed me like a shadow, silent, beautiful, watching me with eyes that had seen centuries pass like storms over the mountains. "You've begun the chronicle," she said one night. Her voice was softer now, less ceremonial, more human. "What the hell is that?" I asked, still shaking, still afraid to look at my own hands for too long. She handed me a book, not a new one, mine. My handwriting, my blood smeared across the spine. The pages were already filling, names, locations, accounts I hadn't written. But they were my memories. Memories I didn't live in this life. "This is the Red Chronicle," she said. "Every reincarnation of the blood writes in it. Not by will, by truth." I flipped through it. Pages of horror, pages of war, pages of cruelty, and love, and vengeance, and pain. And I realized something that made my stomach clench. This book was not meant to be read by others. It was a confession. To myself, I couldn't leave the castle anymore. Not because they stopped me. Because the forest wouldn't let me. Every time I tried to descend those 1,400 steps, I ended up back at the top. No matter how far I ran. No matter how hard I screamed. Time had folded in on itself. The mountain had swallowed me. And somewhere deep inside, a part of me was glad. One night, when the moon was blood bright and hovering like a wound in the sky, I heard voices in the crypt. Familiar voices. My parents. "Lucian," my mother whispered, her voice wet with tears. "Please come home. You don't have to do this." I froze. She died 4 years ago. My father followed. "Son, if you can hear us, it's not too late to turn back. You're not a monster. You're not him." But then came his voice. "Vlad. Clear. Calm. They're not real," he said. "They are memories turned weapons. Doubt disguised as love." I turned to him, trembling. "What the fuck do you want from me?" He didn't answer. Instead, he held up a dagger. The same one I'd seen before. Silver. Bone-handled. Inscribed with the same word etched into my dreams. "Reclaim. Every echo must pass through three rites," Vlad said. "You've remembered. You've drunk. Now you must reclaim." "Reclaim what?" He stepped aside, and I saw the mirror again. But this time, I didn't see myself. I saw a boy, maybe 10, maybe younger, dirt on his face, blood on his knees, eyes wide with terror. "He is you," Vlad said. "The part of you that never got to choose." "Choose what?" "To become the villain. The boy looked at me through the glass, terrified, small, unformed, and I realized that boy was the last innocent part of me, the last memory untouched by blood and legacy. And the right? It wanted me to kill him. I dropped the dagger. "I won't," I said. "I won't do it. I'm not him." Vlad stepped closer. "If you don't end him, he will end you. He will scream in the back of your mind every time you do what must be done. He will cripple your will. He will become the ghost in your bones." He handed me the dagger again. "You must own your own destruction." I walked up to the mirror. The boy looked up at me, tears in his eyes. "Please," he whispered, "don't forget me." And then I did something I didn't expect. I didn't kill him. I embraced him, reached through the mirror, and pulled him into me, held him tight as he cried. And when I opened my eyes, the mirror was gone. And in its place, the throne. Vlad stood beside it, nodded once, and vanished. No puff of smoke, no fanfare. He just left, and the castle groaned, as if relieved. The Brotherhood entered the hall in silence. They formed a circle. They bowed, and Luma walked toward me, clothed in a robe of white and red, crown of bone in her hands. "Your chronicle has begun," she said, "and now your reign." She offered me the crown, but I didn't take it. Not yet, because I wasn't ready. But I would be, soon. Later that night, I returned to the study, opened the journal, wrote a single line. "There is no Dracula, only the parts of ourselves we refuse to remember." And beneath it, "Tomorrow, I take the throne." Chapter 7. The Throne of Ash and Memory. The final morning came like a whisper. No dramatic thunder. No blood-red sunrise. Just mist curling through the shattered towers of Poenary, like a ghost with nowhere else to go. And me, Lucian Andre, awake in the throne room. Alone. No Brotherhood. No Luma. No Vlad. Just silence. And the crown. Still waiting. Still cold. I didn't touch it. Not yet. Instead, I walked the entire castle from top to bottom, like a man paying his last respects to the parts of himself he was about to bury. I traced my fingers along the cracks in the walls, where centuries of war and betrayal had left their scars. I stepped into the chapel, where old blood still clung to the altar like dried prayers. I stood by the balcony, where the wind howled through empty ramparts and sounded exactly like my grandfather used to when he cried out in his sleep. I needed to see it all. I needed to feel every inch of the place one last time, as Lucian, before I became whatever came next. I found her in the crypt, Luma, kneeling by the tomb that once held Vlad. Candles surrounded her, symbols scrawled on the stone floor in dark red chalk that I didn't want to ask about. Her eyes were closed, lips moving in some quiet language that felt too heavy for human tongues. "You're leaving," she said, without opening her eyes. "I don't know what I'm doing," I admitted. She finally looked at me, and there was something in her gaze I hadn't seen before. Not reverence, not fear, sadness. "You are always meant to return," she whispered, "but the ones who come back rarely survive the remembering." "I didn't die," I said. She stood, stepped toward me, reached out and placed a trembling hand over my chest. "No, but he did. The boy, the innocence, the tether." And I realized she wasn't mourning me. She was mourning him. I sat with her for a long time, in silence, breathing in the dust and incense and the unspoken weight of everything we'd lost, everything we'd gained, and the world that would never understand either. And then I asked the question that had been gnawing at me since the first whisper in the mirror. "Was Vlad ever really a man?" She didn't hesitate. "Yes. Once. But the world turned him into a monster. And eventually, he became the monster they feared. Not because he enjoyed it, but because he realized that power has no appetite for mercy." "And me?" I asked. Her answer was quieter this time. "That depends on what you do next." I left her there. Not because I wanted to. Because I had to. Because the castle was calling me again. One last time. The throne room had changed. I don't know how or why, but it had. The walls were darker, the ceiling higher, the shadows deeper, and the air it shimmered, like reality was bending around this final moment. The crown sat on a pillar of black stone, surrounded by fire that burned without smoke, without heat. Just light, pale, judging, and beside it stood Vlad. Not the spectral version, not the hallucination, the man, real, breathing, flesh and blood. "You came back," I said. He didn't smile, didn't blink. "I never left," he replied. "You just stopped seeing." I stepped toward him. "Why me?" His eyes bore into mine. "Because you asked." I frowned. "I never." "You did," he interrupted. "The moment you started asking where you came from. The moment you opened that letter. The moment you touched the tomb. You didn't say it out loud, but your blood did. And blood remembers." He walked to the fire, held out the crown. "I carried this weight for centuries. And it crushed me." He looked at me. "Do you want to carry it now?" I should have said no. I wanted to say no. To walk away. To run. To disappear back into Brooklyn and whiskey and a therapist I'd lie to for the rest of my life. But I didn't. Because deep down, I knew something no one had dared say aloud. The world still needed monsters. Not the kind who kill for pleasure. The kind who remember what the world wants to forget. The kind who keep balance. Even if they burn for it. I took the crown. And the fire vanished. Not died. Obeyed. Vlad stepped back. Nodded once. And then he crumbled. Not like dust. Not like ash. Like memory unraveling. And the wind carried his last whisper. "Don't become me. Become what I couldn't." The castle shook. The torches all flared to life. And the Brotherhood poured into the room, kneeling, chanting my name. Not with devotion, but with fear. Because they knew. This wasn't Vlad reborn. This was something worse. This was truth without apology. And I sat on the throne. And for the first time in my entire life, I felt nothing. Not pain. Not guilt. Not rage. Only clarity. Only silence. Weeks passed. Maybe months. The castle no longer kept time. Luma stayed by my side, speaking only when I asked, bringing me news from outside. The world was changing. Rumors were spreading. A bloodline awakening. A name long thought legend whispered in corridors of power and darkness alike. Lucian Draculesti. The world didn't know me. But it would. Eventually, I did leave the mountain. Not through the stairs. Not through the forest. But through a door that had never been there before. Because I hadn't been ready to see it. And I walked out not as a man with a story to tell, but as the story itself. They'll call me a liar. They'll say it's myth, but they don't understand. This isn't fiction. This is inheritance. This is warning. This is what happens when history dares to speak through the ones who bleed for it. And so I write now to you, whoever you are, reading this, watching this, listening. You want to know if Vlad the Impaler was the real Dracula? No, he was only the beginning, the echo. The throne is still warm, and I am the voice that followed.